Welcome to Reframe and Reset Your Career, a career development podcast to help if you're looking for a job, feeling stuck in your career, looking to change your perspective, or just rediscover your why. I'm your host, Harsha Boralesa, and this podcast came about from my passion for neuroscience and psychology and their interaction with career and personal development. In each episode, I will be interviewing recognized experts and successful professionals and asking them about their career journey, their real life experiences, and to share the insights and strategies that have helped their careers thrive. Implementing change is not easy and does take time, but I do hope that their stories will inspire you to take a fresh look at your career and assist you on your path to a more successful and fulfilling career. Here are some highlights of today's episode.
If we can look at the things that we do have control over versus the things we don't, we're going to find a pathway through it. What do you want to be known for? These are the kinds of things that also help you get to the next place. People allow themselves to be in this process of, I'm just going to do this for 10 years so that I can get to this place, you know, that's out there. You don't know that that's even going to be there in 10 years.
Thank you so much for joining me today on the Reframe and Reset Your Career podcast. I'm delighted to welcome Tammy Gula-Loeb. Welcome, Tammy.
Thank you, Harsha. It's my pleasure to be here.
I've been really looking forward to this for a long time, so it's great to have you here, Tammy. Tammy is an executive and career coach, speaker, facilitator, and the host of the Work From the Inside Out podcast. She is passionate about working with clients to achieve growth and deeper satisfaction in their careers and work relationships. She does this by providing individual coaching, training, speaking programs, and team facilitation in a wide variety of industries and professions. Tammy brings over 25 years of professional experience to her work and is a certified professional coactive coach by the Coaches Training Institute and a graduate of the Coactive Space Leadership Program. Prior to establishing her practice, Tammy held a wide variety of positions in mental health services, higher education administration, public policy analysis, and fundraising. Her practical knowledge and experience in organizational and leadership development, workplace communications, and change management builds a stable relationship with clients, striving for higher performance results. Tammy holds a BA in psychology from Hampshire College and an MBA from Boston University. Most exciting of all, Tammy will soon be a published author, and her book, Work From the Inside Out, will soon be published. Welcome, Tammy.
Thank you, Harsha. That sounds so exciting to hear you talk about the book.
It's such a pleasure, Tammy, to have you on the show. And do you have a quote that you would like to share?
Well, I have a few quotes, but one that comes to mind immediately is one that Maya Angelou has been given credit for. Something goes like, they may not remember what you said, but they will remember how you made them feel. Because I think that a lot of times people worry about their words or they worry about how to say something. It's far more important how you just show up, because that's the piece that people will remember most. That's the impact you need to be concerned about. And in fact, I think you should worry less about that and just show up.
That's a great quote, Tammy. And I like the thing you say about it's how you make people feel, because sometimes I think people can misspeak, but I think where there's goodwill between people, then, you know, people will just say, oh, he or she misspoke. But where there's not goodwill, I think that's where the problem is. And sometimes in workplace conflicts or issues or even personal conflicts, there is no goodwill.
No, I think that's true. And I think that more often than not, you know, people are often just either scared or they're protecting themselves in some way. You know, there's just something getting in the way of them leaving themselves open to what's possible. They're afraid to make a mistake, so they kind of cover for themselves. And then what ends up coming out is some kind of either ill will or they're blaming somebody else. I think blame is one of those toxic dynamics that comes out. It just makes things a whole lot messier.
And sometimes it's interesting that this whole idea of people look for a fall guy, I think that's really unfair, because I think the whole idea of having teams is they should sort of live and die together to some extent. So why do you need to have a fall guy? It should be, you know, it's never one person's fault. And sometimes right. I feel really sorry for that junior guy who has to take the fall.
Right. The thing that I often will tell people as I'm coaching them, whether I'm talking to a team or talking to an individual, I always point out, no matter who the hurting party is or the blaming party, whatever, because I think everybody's probably hurting in one way or another, is I just say, look, everything is a two-way street, even though I live here in Boston where we have a lot of one-way streets and people get lost a lot. The point is most things don't happen in a one-way fashion. It's a two-way fashion. So even when I have somebody who's telling me about a situation where clearly something happened, where they were wronged, or a dynamic that goes on that's really serving them well, I always say to them, I hear you. You definitely something's not right here. I just want you to take a step back and look at what is it that you might be doing that's also contributing to this dynamic. And I try to say it gently, because especially when somebody's feeling very, either a little like in the victim place or like they've been wronged, I try to say it in a way to say, look, we all play a role in these situations. And I try not to take away from how they're feeling, but to say, we all play a role in how these things happen. So even if you have, let's say, a boss who's not treating you well, what is it that you're doing to contribute to that? It doesn't mean that your boss is not at fault here. But when we start to get into blame and fault and all one-sided, it doesn't get us to that place of resolution at all. So if we can look at the things that we do have control over versus the things we don't, we're going to find a pathway through it rather than sitting in that stuck place. Because when we start to blame, we can't do anything about someone else's behavior.
Totally agree with you, Tammy. And I'd definitely like to pick up on that stuff at the back end of the interview. But before we dive in, first of all, I just wanted to say thank you so much for providing the final push to start my podcast by inviting me onto your podcast, the Work From The Inside Out podcast. Great podcast. And I would definitely tell all my listeners to have a look at that. And in my eyes, Tammy, you are the godfather or the godmother.
But I'm delighted. It was so much fun to have you on Work From The Inside Out, which is also the name of my book, by the way. And it really was a delight to have you. And it's just been an absolute delight to get to know you better and to really have you as a colleague and a friend. And it's been so much fun to watch you now developing your own podcast. And it's not even just watching you kind of grow this. It's fun to see you enjoying it and having fun with it, because these things are a lot of work, as you know. And if it's all just work and not play or not enjoyment, or we don't feel like, you know, that it's not a part of us, it's not worth doing, quite frankly. But I can see that you're just really enjoying it. I'm just delighted to see that. And I think we're both just having a lot of fun with both of our shows. And it's...
Yeah, no, totally.
And I think there's a lot of service that we provide for people as a result.
Yeah, but I like your first point. I think it's about having fun, because I think if you're having fun, hopefully it comes over to the listeners. And also we have a good time as well. And it's almost as if they're listening into us having fun, you know, obviously, hopefully giving some helpful tips, but also just having a good time. But what I'd like to move on to from that is this whole idea of how do you form these relationships? How do people get to like each other? And I know that Robert Cialdini talks about finding commonalities which connect to each other. How do you think we sort of connected? Because it's not as if we live in the same town. We have a sort of a similar background, but we get on really well. Right. What are your thoughts?
Well, I love the question, first of all, because I do find on a regular basis that I do come across people. I would say I come across people like yourself, but yet I do think that there's no one else like you out there, Harsha. No, it's true. I really feel that way because you do exude a warmth and a friendliness and an interest in people. So I think there's a couple of things. It's not just one thing. However, you know, you and I both are in Dori Clark's recognized expert community. So that was the first place we connected through that. But it's more than that because there are hundreds of people in that community. Yeah. So there are people in that community neither one of us have met. So what else was it that brought us together? You know, there's parts of that I'm not even sure about. Sometimes it's just one of those little defining moments, as I call them, where you just, something catches your interest, you trust your intuition, you trust it's the less tangible things. You just have a hunch and you say, I'm going to reach out to this person. Does it spark a little bit of, you know, interest, or is it just a hello, nice to meet you, and you move on? And I think then you find that you either have some common interests or common values, something clicks, two people really enjoying, you know, that sense of connectedness. We just clicked immediately. It was just, you know, you asked me some great questions about podcasting, but the questions you asked were very thoughtful about the process and thoughtful about how I got into it. So it felt like this is a good use of my time. And this is somebody who isn't just trying to get something out of me. This is somebody who wants to get to know me too. I mean, there's an element of all of this that just is intangible. That's okay.
We're here now. That's the main thing. Do you think there are ways that you could maybe put this into, it's something I've been thinking about. Can you make people like you? Because, I mean, from a personal perspective, I found that when I'm working in companies, if you can get on with your boss, you can get on with your colleagues and get them to like you, it just makes such a difference. And it's that sort of intangible formula. What do you think, Tom?
Well, I think there are things you can do. And it's not about making somebody like you, but I think there are ways that you can try to connect with somebody. Let them feel seen and understood. It reminds me of something that Dale Carnegie said, be interested, not interesting. So take the focus off of yourself and show an interest in the other person, but in a way where you are genuinely interested, not just, you know, on the surface, but try to understand what's really, truly important to the other person, but also to give them some kind of feedback along the way that what they shared with you is of value elsewhere, not just, oh, aren't you the greatest, you know, stroking their ego as much as showing that there's something that they're doing that's actually having an impact or an effect elsewhere, to be able to convey to people that what they're doing matters. People want to know that they matter. Even some of the people at the highest levels of organizations don't always understand they have an impact. They really don't get that. And I'm not saying like you're going to sit down and give them feedback, but to be able to say, even in the way you say a thank you to somebody, you know, to let them know how it made a difference, you'll notice just in the look on their face, you touched them in a way that someone else might not have. And that actually ties back in with the quote that I offered at the very beginning. So again, it may not be in the words, it's just the impact that you have. And it's a great way to connect with somebody and let them know that they've made a difference. People really want to make a difference. And it's a great way to get them to connect with you and remember you.
Totally. Going back to the beginning, your father was a psychologist and your mother also was in a caring sort of profession. And I love this quote from your book that you say your mission from a very early age has been to help people live their best possible lives. And do you think that comes from your sort of father and mother?
I think so. I mean, my parents both were, my dad was a school psychologist. He worked with kids and their families. A lot of the kids that he worked with were kids with different learning issues or behavioral issues. And my mom was a social worker in a nursing home working with the elderly and their families. And they used to come home and just talk with such care and compassion about all these different people they worked with. And it definitely sparked something in me. And I could tell they were making a difference. And from a very young age onward, I think maybe age 10 or 11, they would include me in some parts of their work lives, whether it was, I know my dad ran a summer camp for kids with developmental disabilities. And he used to bring me with him. And I got to meet some of the kids who went to the camp. And I don't know, it just left me feeling good that they were helping people live their best lives. And it made me want to do the same. I remember being really moved by the Helen Keller story. The movie had come out when I was a little kid with Patty Duke. Now I'm really aging myself. I remember just being so fascinated by Helen Keller that she had no sight and no hearing and yet could have the impact that she had. At that point in time, I thought, oh, I want to be a teacher and teach people who can't see or can't hear. And I just thought that was amazing.
Do you think your father's job influenced you, your decision to read psychology at university, Tammy?
No doubt about it. It was on my mind for a very, very long time. And when I, you know, a lot of kids, they go off to school and they're still not sure what they want to do. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And I went to a school, Hampshire College, where you create your own major. So I didn't go to a traditional school where it was all laid out for me. But I went to Hampshire and I pretty much modeled my studies after a traditional psychology major, but I did it in the context of a school that offered a lot of interdisciplinary studies. And yet I wanted to be able to have enough of the right coursework so that if I wanted to go on and get a master's and doctorate in psychology, I'd have a lot, you know, enough of the right coursework. It was so clear to me from day one that I wanted to do something in that arena.
And after college, I believe you sort of worked for a bit, traveled, and then came back to the U.S. to work in the city of Boston's office. Is that right?
Yes, I got a job. I was, I got a job in the mayor's office in Boston. And that was a very, my goal was to learn more about public policy at that point. I had worked in publicly funded mental health, community mental health programs. And I started to get very curious about how those programs were funded and how and who was making the decisions to fund those programs and how were they actually meeting the needs of the people they were intended to serve. And so I thought, I think I need to learn more about public policy to understand that because I clearly had some concerns about that. I was able to get a job in the mayor's office and working with the mayor's advisor on human services and public health. And we worked on a number of policies. So it was also a very political environment. I was there for 4 years. It was a very interesting place to work in many, many ways. It was also very grueling and draining. I ended up not really liking the political side of it. To this day, I'm so, so, so glad I worked there and so glad I did that. I learned so much and made a ton of contacts, connections, friends. And to this day, here in the Boston area, I still run into people I worked with there or, you know, and it helped me to develop a real understanding of a variety of organizations and services and programs and areas of things going on here. So it was like a 4-year boot camp in some ways.
But I think that's interesting. When you're working in the public services, you have to understand the mechanics of what's going on because there's obviously a bunch of money. But how does it get spent? How does it get divvied up? So I think this idea of policy and funding, it's so crucial to really understand what the mechanics of that.
Well, and at the time that I was there, the federal government actually was pumping millions of dollars into cities and towns to provide funding for homelessness services and programs. And Boston was one of those cities that was considered to be kind of a model for that. So I was part of something that was really being watched very carefully. And we were kind of a model for that. And it was very exciting to be a part of that. But I also learned a lot along the way about housing and hunger and poverty and all those uplifting issues. But it was interesting to be part of something that wasn't just, you know, being part of city government. It really was part of the interplay of different levels of government and interacting with things all the way to being a part of things that were on the national level. So it was really exciting in a lot of ways.
I believe after that you did your MBA. Is that right?
I actually started it when I was still with the city. So I was still working for the city and then started the MBA part-time at night. So I was working full-time during the day, going to classes at night. No life outside of work and school. And then I finished up the MBA for about a year. After I finished up at the city, I spent about a year finishing up the MBA at that point. Yeah.
And then after that, did you decide to go into coaching, Tammy? Is that right?
No, actually, I didn't. I kind of wish I had. But no, at that point, I had an opportunity right out of the master's degree to join a small consulting firm that did a lot of program development work. They hired me to do a lot of proposal writing and grant writing for them. I had gotten a lot of experience with the city writing parts of federal grants and different proposals. And so I did that for about a year. It really wasn't the right thing for me, but I did get a good amount of experience. And so from there, I kind of piggybacked onto that and ended up then really wanting to do my own thing. I sort of blended my work life after that and continued to work part-time as in a variety of fundraising roles in different organizations whose work I really believed in, you know, could really get behind, and then started to build my own consulting practice around strategic planning, fundraising, grant writing, a variety of things, working with nonprofits. So I did kind of a part-time anchor of some kind of part-time job, and then would also have my own consulting. I think it was maybe 8-9 years later, I heard about this thing called coaching. It was a very new field. I was at that point realizing that the nonprofit consulting, fundraising, all that, it really wasn't my thing. I felt very like I was on an island most of the time when I was doing that work. I didn't feel connected or engaged a lot of the time. So I knew I needed to do something that really connected me to people more. So I thought maybe I was going to have to go for another master's degree or something. So I started searching and got introduced to a coach who actually had done the Coactive Coaching program. And she gave me an overview of that, which sounded great. And then I found out about a few other coaching programs, and I vetted them all out, and I ended up choosing the Coactive Coaching program and just literally dove in headfirst into it, did all the courses and the certification program, which was pretty intensive. And about a year later, I got certified and already started my coaching practice at that time. Now, I still continued with my model of holding down a part-time job to have some kind of financial anchor. I was married at this time already and had a young child. So I was also conscious of the fact that I needed to be an income earner as well. But it didn't hurt to have a spouse who was also making an income. But also to have the support of a spouse doing this. And it was helpful with a young child to have a part-time job and not two full-time jobs in the household. It helped with the flexibility. So I held down a part-time job. At that point, actually, I was working in higher ed as an administrator. So I was kind of tapping into my MBA degree and kind of playing business manager of an academic program at Tufts University, and then building my coaching practice. And then after a few years, I was able to then sort of hang up my coaching shingle full time. And that was a little over 20 years ago, and I've never looked back.
Wow. So you started when you were 15 then, Tammy, coaching.
Yes. Amazingly. Yes. It really, you know, it's amazing how, you know, time flies.
You were just a gifted child, Tammy.
I was. I still am, Harsha.
So, Tammy, I believe it was 2 years ago that you joined Dori Clark's recognized expert community. Oh, three.
It's actually about 3.5 years ago.
Oh, wow. So I believe
three and a half of the best years of my career, to be honest with you. It's one of the best things other than finding coaching. There's a few points in my career that I would point to as being really, I'd say, both pivotal and high points. Going to Hampshire College was definitely a high point. Finding coaching was a high point, and finding Dori Clark's recognized expert course and community, definite high points. Meeting Harsha, high point, high point.
Okay.
But 3.5 years ago really has made a huge, huge difference in how I've been able to take the things I've been wanting to do for a long time to, you know, a whole nother level, and just really grateful for that.
Brilliant. And I believe that inspired you to start podcasting and the Work From The Inside Out podcast. Is that right?
Yes. So even though my podcast has been out for about 2.5 years, I joined Joy's community. And then in the process of that was, you know, working on getting it started. So it took me a while to kind of get it out of the gate.
And essentially the podcast has sort of helped lead to the book.
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
It's true. I'll tell you something, Harsha. I had that book inside of me for a long time. There was a book that came out many years ago by a journalist, or he was a journalist at the time. His name is Poe Bronson. And I think the name of the book was called What Should I Do With My Life? And when that book came out, I remember thinking, darn, somebody wrote the book I wanted to write. And then I kind of put it aside. And that book came out a long time ago now. And he's gone on to write all kinds of other things, like totally different kinds of books. I remember when that came out and I thought, he wrote the book I wanted to write. And that kind of stayed with me. Then I did the podcast. And I think really being in the recognized expert community really kind of relit that fire. I would say that being in the recognized expert community definitely spurred me on to really take that dormant dream and really bring it to life again.
That's a brilliant point you make, Tammy, because it's that whole idea of we almost stop ourselves from progressing. And if we can actually get out of the way, I mean, something like stand out. I was thinking, you know, when I started my career, that's what I was trying to do, stand out. And it's such a sort of easy concept to think about. But then Dori's written that book. But that doesn't mean that I can't talk about stand up in the work out in the work that I want to do.
Right.
Or the same thing with the work that you're doing. So it's really like a reinterpretation of these strategies and experience.
Absolutely. I think what Dori's done so beautifully is she's laid, you know, kind of a blueprint, but I think it's up to each of us to take those, let's say, specs or specifications and then design it, you know, specifically to our own person, who we are, who we want to be. I don't think it's about doing everything the way Dori has necessarily done it. She's a unique individual, you know, sets a great example for many things. And yet there's lots of different variations and different ways to go about things that, you know, each person has to find their own way. And you have to take ownership of that. You have to really find what works for you. That's why, and I think that's why I'm so big on this whole inside out thing, is it's not about taking something you read about in a book and trying to aspire to that as much as let what you read in the book kind of source that within yourself and say, how do I express that from the inside going out, rather than taking something you read about in a book and then say, okay, how can I fit myself into that mold or that idea, or be like this one or be like that one? That's not going to work. Those things you read about elsewhere are really just prompts for you then to figure out what's going to be the best path for you. But if you don't find it within yourself at some point along the way, it's not going to fit right.
So would you say sort of a high level view of your book is literally just there are these stories in there, and it's really up to the person to figure out what resonates with them and then trying to adapt it to their own life? Is that correct?
Totally correct. In fact, one of the concerns that I've had about the book is that the stories of the people that I tell, and there's 22 stories in the book, those are all people who found their own way to accomplish certain things in their lives. And I'm not suggesting that when you read the book that you try to do things exactly the way they did them, because they each had different circumstances in their lives that enabled them to do things in a certain way or to accomplish things. And they're just all different people. But I think what I'm trying to show people in the book is that these things are possible and that you can find your own way to them. So the obstacles that I'm highlighting highlighting in each chapter are obstacles that a lot of people share with me in my coaching practice, and I see elsewhere in my life. They're obstacles that hold people back from moving their careers or their lives forward, and they end up, as a result, staying stuck in perhaps a career or a work life that isn't satisfying or fulfilling for them. I'm hoping that this book will serve a lot of different people by way of seeing where maybe their stuck points are, and to see at least some examples of people who have moved through some of those stuck points and have gotten through them. That doesn't mean you're going to get through those stuck points the same way, because some of these people had, I don't know, certain resources available to them to get through them, or other advantages or other disadvantages that you don't have. You really have to find your own way through it. But the fact of the matter is, there is always a way through. People are capable of reaching a more fulfilling and satisfying place in their careers than many of them are at. And we know, you know, like the Gallup polls show that only about maybe 39% of people are really feeling engaged at work. That's a lot of people who aren't feeling all that engaged by their work. That's sad.
That's rather depressing. But I love the way you start your book with, you know, talking about fear, because as we mentioned before, so many times it's the fear of the unknown or the fear of trying to do something different.
Right.
What's your sort of take on that, Tammy?
You know, in terms of fear, you're talking about the fear?
Yes.
Yes. So fear is what seems to drive a lot of people away from finding something that would be more satisfying, because they're afraid of making a mistake. They're afraid of upsetting, you know, the proverbial apple cart, so to speak, whether it's they're afraid people won't support them. They're afraid they may not be able to make the kind of money they need or want to make. They're afraid people won't accept them. And so the first chapter is all about fear, because that's usually the foundation for everything else that gets in the way. So, for example, subsequent chapters, there's a chapter about age. Well, people are afraid they're too old. They're afraid that ageism is going to get in the way. Now, don't get me wrong. Ageism is a factor. But I think there are ways around ageism. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm saying there's a way around it. So it's really about your mindset. If you allow your fear to stop you, it will stop you. If you acknowledge your fear and you see it for what it is, then you have an opportunity to work through it. It's not about working around it. It's working right through it. Recognize it. What are you afraid of? Are you afraid that you're going to, I don't know, empty your bank account, or you're afraid that your spouse is going to be upset with you, or you're afraid that no one's going to hire you, or that you want to start a business and nobody's going to come? Know what those fears are and be prepared to deal with them. So the first thing that I want people to know is, if you're afraid, what is it in yourself that you're not trusting? So you have to trust yourself first. Most people are very hard on themselves, and that's where the fear begins. They're not trusting themselves.
We stop ourselves sometimes from actually progressing. I came across this neuroscientist called Andrew Huberman, and he was saying that sometimes if you actually approach the problem, it could be it could cause pain, but actually that's the best thing to do. And sometimes it's that thought in our minds, this is too hard, this is too difficult. But actually, when you start doing it, it's like doing your taxes. I hate doing them. But you know, eventually you think, well, it's not that bad and you can do it in probably a day. But you've thought about it and thought about it so much, you're just afraid of starting.
There's also another way to think about it too, right? So that's a great metaphor, is like thinking about doing your taxes. The other way that I like to encourage people is, first of all, usually when you're afraid, you're thinking about it alone. You're not talking to anyone else about it. First and foremost, if you decide for yourself that you want to make some sort of change, whether it's changing jobs, deciding when you're going to retire, starting a side gig, whatever it is that you want to change into, don't stay in your own head. First things first, find a trusted person, find a coach, get outside of your own head first and foremost, because you're doing so much damage just letting those thoughts swirl around in your head, right? So start to talk out loud about it. That immediately will start to dilute it. The more you start talking to other people, the more you'll start coming up with other ideas and alternatives. So you'll notice your shoulders will start to go down. You'll start to see the possibilities. That will start to get you into action. The more action you get into, the more, you know, and you don't have to do, it's not going from all to nothing. I think a lot of people also let their fears take them from, oh, well, I'm here today and then I need to get to the end result. And they don't think about all the incremental steps they could take to just start moving towards something.
I think that's a great point because I think I mentioned to you, I've started writing a book. I started on Seth Godin's Akimbo course. And the great thing about that is they say you've got a certain period of time and essentially figure out what you need to write and then work backwards. Right. And actually, when you start writing, if you just spend half an hour a day and maybe a couple of hours at the weekend, you can really rack up those numbers. So I've managed to hit sort of 18,000-19,000 words, and I only need to get to like 35,000. So actually, I've already got over half of the way there. So it's really just trying to break everything down into these small chunks and not get stressed out about it.
The other thing that comes to mind listening, and congratulations on that, is
inspired
to just,
by you.
I know. I'm like, I feel like I'm at the head of this parade or something. I think that the worst thing we do to ourselves, and we all do it, I'm not saying like I'm sitting here talking about this, but I do it to myself all the time. I have to catch myself. We're so harsh. We judge ourselves so harshly. If we take a step back and just say, if I was watching myself as if I was someone else, what advice would I give to myself? How would I talk to myself if I was somebody else talking to me? Immediately, we would find at least a little bit of compassion.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I also like the thing you talked about in your book about success. It's not a destination. The whole idea, how do you define success? Because, you know, it can be in so many different ways. I mean, what's your sort of take on that, Tammy?
Well, I think that ties back in with this sort of all or nothing thinking that people assume, and you know what happens when you assume.
Not good things.
They assume that you're supposed to be arriving somewhere, you know. When we hear people talk about, oh, well, you know, they're very successful, you know, they've arrived. Well, what does that really mean? How do people define that? It's not just about what you have in your bank account. Maybe some people have a goal. They set a goal to make a certain amount of money. Nothing wrong with that. I'm not putting that down, but there's got to be something else underneath that. You know, what is it that you are trying to accomplish or have an impact on? Again, we get back to this whole notion of what's your impact? It's not just a finality to it. Hopefully you will find yourself successful along the way. You know, how did you get through, you know, grade school or high school? You were successful then in some ways. Then you go off to college or university. Success continues to happen over time. It's not just an end point. You know, give yourself a chance to feel good about what you're doing on a continuum. It's iterative. It's not just a place that you land in eventually. And too often people allow themselves to be in this process of, I'm just going to do this for 10 years so that I can get to this place, you know, that's out there. You don't know that that's even going to be there in 10 years.
The pandemic happens and then everything gets...
Right. Right. Or the markets go crazy, or, you know, there's so many things. It's like, I'm not saying that you always have to live completely in the moment. There's nothing wrong with being planful, but think about it. What are you reaching for? Think about why that's important to you. What can you create in your now that also points to that why? That's going to matter to you now. Figure that out. And I'm not just trying to sound like Simon Sinek here, but it is about your why.
Totally. And I think sometimes looking back on your backstory, it's quite interesting because I remember when I was preparing for your podcast, I tried to figure out, like, why did I make these decisions? Why did I get to where I got to? It's almost like patting yourself on the back. I mean, obviously, you don't want to be narcissistic and think, oh, how wonderful am I? But on the other hand, I think sometimes, as you're saying, we are too harsh on ourselves. Yeah. And actually, you know, going to university, getting qualifications, getting work experience, doing all these, you know, quite interesting things. It actually takes somebody else to say, wow, and give you a chance to appear on their podcast for almost yourself to feel validated and thinking, well, if that person thinks that I'm interesting enough to appear on their podcast, then yeah, I have something, you know, relatively interesting to say.
Yeah, I think the key to that is think about what you think is important. What is it that you can share that you think would be helpful to other people? Again, it's not about ego. Think when, if we can check our egos at the door and just think about what do we think we have to say that would be useful? We've worked hard to get to the place that we're at. We've spent years and years developing ourselves, going to school, working hard at something or some things. Did we just reach this point so that we could just shrink away? I don't think so. So why would we go about day after day doing something that we feel we either don't deserve or we're not particularly happy in? And I'm saying this to all those, you know, let's say 65-ish percent of you out there who may not be feeling all that engaged in what you're doing, and say, look, you've worked very hard to get there. Now go work hard to get somewhere where you deserve to be. I also think that it's very important for people who have children. Your children need to see that you like your work. This is, you know, look at my parents. My parents were great role models for this. You want your children to see that going to work every day or doing something professionally is satisfying and rewarding, not just that going to work is just this thing you just do for a paycheck.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point you made there, Tammy, because, you know, the parents are so influential on their children. And if the children see they're not happy and they're not into what they're doing, then something doesn't seem right. And that sort of influences their decisions in a way. So, great point.
Yeah, it can go either way. I mean, I've talked to some young adults who saw their parents kind of slog through and they've said, oh, I want to make sure I do something I really enjoy. But I think, you know, it can go either way. Some people also grew up seeing, oh, I guess work is just a thing you just do during the day and then you have fun in the rest of your life. I would like to think that we can have fun all the time.
Yeah. Start a podcast.
Yeah. I mean, look, there are always things we're going to do that we don't love doing, right? I'm not trying to sound like, you know, like everything's just for fun. But I think that if we can derive an element of satisfaction and fulfillment and meaning in what we're doing on a regular basis, think about what that really lends itself to, not just for ourselves, but the people whose lives we touch all the time, whether it's our families, our friends, our coworkers, whoever it is. There's just every good reason, you know, to be working or working towards that.
Right, fantastic. And sort of moving on to careers in general, and I think that this sort of touches on the last point that we were talking about, people are not happy in their jobs. I think confidence plays a huge role in your job. Is there any way of gaining more confidence or self-belief? Because I think if you have that confidence, then maybe people will think about, I deserve a better life than the one I'm sort of stuck in.
Well, that's a big topic. And I think it's one that is deeply ingrained in a lot of people. You know, a lot of us have these tapes, for those of us who remember tapes, you know, running in through our heads, or just, you know, messages, a lot of negative self-talk. It's actually a very natural human phenomenon. It's not even just like, oh, you're the only one who has all these negative messages. We all have them. But we have these sort of regular messages that run through our heads that tell us, I'm too much of that. I'm not enough of this. And it can undermine us in very, very, very sneaky, sneaky ways. And so it becomes a habit. For some people, it's part of their upbringing. People always told them they weren't good enough or that they would never make something out of themselves. That's a therapy. You know, that's a time to go to therapy, right? But there's also, for a lot of people, there's just kind of a regular message that just keeps running and it undermines your confidence. So again, I think it's important to get out of your own head, to learn how to reframe those things when they show up. They will keep showing up. I don't think that it's something you can totally get rid of, but you can at least identify them and notice them. So there's a great book that really helps people. Well, there's several great books, but one in particular that I'd probably assign it to about 90% of my clients. It's called Taming Your Gremlin by Richard Carson. He's a psychologist, and really helps you to think through how can you just notice when those things show up, those negative messages that really undermine your confidence and tell you you're too much of this, not enough of that. And it really gets in the way of you showing up at your best. And he offers a number of sort of methodologies and approaches and tools for how you can really reframe those things. And the first thing he suggests is just simply notice when it shows up. Because some of these things are so automatic, it's almost like a subconscious process. You really have to bring it to more of a consciousness. Simply notice means you notice it, you don't judge it, you don't tell yourself you're bad for having it happen, because I'm telling you, we all do this. And give yourself time to practice just simply noticing. And it's a step you have to keep taking over and over again. It's hard work to get over this confidence thing, because it really is, I think, a very conscious process, kind of a cognitive behavioral process. If anyone's not familiar with cognitive behavioral therapy, I'm not suggesting you have to go out and hire a cognitive behavioral therapist, sure. But there's a term that we use in cognitive behavioral therapy. I say, because a lot of coaching uses cognitive behavioral techniques, and it's called reframing. So how can you reframe that? So if you say, a lot of people get feedback at work, you don't speak up enough at meetings. Well, then you're insecure about, well, when I do speak up, am I saying the right things? Then you're afraid to speak up, or you're afraid you'll say the wrong thing, right? It becomes a mad cycle. So you have to reframe that. A reframe could be, I speak up too much at meetings. That's not the case. A reframe might be, what would it look like if I spoke up more frequently at meetings? And what would I say? Or what would be another way for me to get myself heard, even if it's not at a meeting? So that might be a better reframe. So I have things to say. I want to make them clear. How can I get myself heard? Maybe it's not about even the dynamic in a meeting, but it's, how do I get myself heard so that I'm not getting this criticism about my behavior in meetings?
I mean,
or you go back to the person who gave you that feedback and say, what would you like to hear from me in meetings? You know, put it back on them, even. Two-way street.
That's an amazing point you make there, Tammy, because you can actually go away and write an article, a blog post, or create a YouTube video, stick it on LinkedIn, and then you're almost increasing your profile. And I think that's really powerful. And you know, I think back in the day when we were in offices, sometimes I think it's the people who spoke the loudest and talked the most who shone. But actually, I think when you're outside at home and on Zoom, you actually really have to produce, and you can't get away with just talking. Hopefully that's helped people who actually create rather than talk. Hopefully that those guys and girls will progress rather than the talkers.
I hope so. I think you're right, though. I think it's, the dynamic has changed a whole lot. But I still see in my coaching practice people who are incredibly high achievers who still claim to be incredibly insecure or have issues with confidence. And I think some of it just becomes a habit. It's a habit, and they're still achieving high things. But I think what gets in the way is they're just not enjoying themselves as much because their confidence is low. Even though everyone around them thinks they do a great job, they're not letting themselves enjoy it because they just have this habit of low confidence. It really does require, I think, some therapy in some cases, and really developing some new habits. And I think you have to very consciously say to yourself, I want to start writing a different narrative. I want it to look different. So I think that's a very important first step, is just, you know, it's like, how many people does it take to change a light bulb?
Totally. Yeah, you know, without a doubt. The point I was trying to make is that if you're feeling a little bit down, not really where there's sort of the mental health issues, and I suppose coaching can deal with a certain aspect, but obviously, yeah, this show is not to deal with the mental health aspects. And I think if you are feeling in that situation, get proper advice and counseling.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, lots of people need that, and there's no shame there. I've got plenty of clients who see me and get some other help, because it just helps them to find a better place to go forward from.
No, totally. Yeah, just in terms of sort of building your profile and your brand within a company, because I think nowadays that's so important. Yeah, you can do your work and you can do it well, but I think if people don't know what you're doing, or especially I think if people from outside your company, they validate what you're doing, that makes a huge difference. Any suggestions there, Tammy, as to, you know, apart from getting on LinkedIn and producing content?
Building relationships is very important in terms of doing that, and directly. So, you know, LinkedIn, of course, as you mentioned, is one place to do that. So even though you said besides LinkedIn, I think LinkedIn is a great place to do that. But I think outside of LinkedIn, well, within LinkedIn, there are a lot of different ways to be interactive with people that people don't always acknowledge. But on top of LinkedIn, or outside of LinkedIn, I should say, you know, think about those people whose relationships matter to you. And what would be some of the ways that you want people to know you in a certain way? What do you want to be known for? These are the kinds of things that also help you get to the next place. And I wouldn't say that you should make these efforts simply because it's going to get you somewhere, but that it's just something that you do because of who you are. So if there are certain relationships, whether they are clients, vendors, peers in other companies, make the time to either connect with them by setting up time to just say hello and chat. If it's somebody who you feel like you'd want to do business with down the road, or just get a closer connection with, you know, even send them a little gift. Let's say you found out they got a promotion, you send them a little gift. Congratulations. I've had people send me gifts lately that I really wasn't expecting. I was really quite delighted and pleased. So anyone who wants to send me gifts, I'm really happy to receive them. There's lots of ways to just be interested, not interesting. But the way that you show that you're interested is to just make an effort to connect, whether it's a live conversation, or, you know, sending somebody an article that you read that made you think of them, or let's say you're involved with a particular professional association or organization, and they're having an event and you'd like to invite someone as your guest. So I think that there's a whole variety of ways to engage with people and build those relationships and let people know that you're thinking of them, celebrate them, acknowledge them as part of your professional life, and let them know you appreciate them and that they're in your professional world, your network matters to you. I should write an ebook on this, like 100 different ways to let somebody know.
Yeah, no, it's a great idea.
You got me a good idea here. Because I think there's a lot of ways that you can engage people and let them know. And this really does come under the category of how people will remember you. You know, that's the person who sent me the card with the tea bag in it that said, I know we can't meet for tea right now, but I thought I'd send you the tea bag, you know, or you send somebody, you know, even a Starbucks card, and you say, look, I know we can't meet for coffee, but have a coffee on me. So there's lots of different little things you can do, gestures that people will remember because no one else is doing it.
And it's interesting, that whole idea of doing something for somebody else. It's that whole Robert Cialdini reciprocity thing. Because if you do something, no matter how trivial it is, people feel, well, I should do something in reverse for that person. And also, I think the whole point about just doing something, don't overthink it. Just do it.
Right.
Because you never know, you could be procrastinating, but actually just start off, do something small, that it can lead to great things.
And I would say, you know, this is a great confidence or lack of confidence buster, right? Reach out to somebody who you think, you know, you wouldn't be able to reach otherwise. I've actually done this a bunch lately. I've been reaching out to people who I think are kind of in a different echelon or something, and just seeing what would happen when I reach out to them. I've been pleasantly surprised by, you know, the responses, and I've been not surprised by some of the other responses, but it's interesting to see how people respond. Now, I've been inviting them to be on my podcast, so that might be enticing for some of them. I'm not sending them baskets of cookies or anything, but I don't even need more podcast guests right now. You know, it's not like I'm doing it for that reason. I just would like to connect with people whose work I've admired. But it's interesting when you just start doing things like that, it actually kind of builds your confidence a little bit. You start realizing, oh, I guess I'm just a person like they are. Some people actually really appreciate being reached out to.
But it's also that whole idea of you like or love that person's work. You yeah. simply want to spread that among the internet or the community. I mean, who doesn't like that? Right. I think that's quite a flattering thing. If somebody suddenly called me up and said, I'd like to be on, you know, could you be on my podcast? I think, well, yeah, if you're willing to have me on, then that's a huge honor.
Well, there are some people who don't see it quite that way. I will tell you that, but those are not the people I'm necessarily going to want to continue to engage with.
Yeah,
but totally. I think that, you know, engagement is a two-way street. So engage with those people who will engage with you. Those are the people you want to be in relationship with. As far as I'm concerned, relationships make the world go round where we are, Harsha.
No, totally. Yeah, exactly. Finally, Tammy, is there anybody you'd like to give a shout out to on the podcast? Because I always like to ask my guests if there's anybody in particular.
I think Dori Clark always deserves a shout out because it seems to me that if it wasn't for Dori, you and I wouldn't be sitting here talking.
Totally, yeah, without a doubt.
And I really do feel like her work and the way that she has formed relationships and the way she continues to form relationships is such a shining example of what we're talking about here. And it's a great example of how you can build yourself professionally and personally. And I also think she's a great example of how to carry yourself with confidence, but also kindness. I do enjoy that part of her very much. So I give Dori a shout out.
I think she's done it in a very pleasant way. She's produced great content and she's marketed herself, but not in a unpleasant way. And also, I think when you do speak to her, she's not always thinking, oh, how can this person help me? It's a very genuine thing. I mean, she was guest number 5 on my podcast. And I'm thinking, like, she doesn't have to do this, but, but she did it. And we had a great time on there. But before we wrap up, Tammy, so how can people get hold of you? What's the best way of doing that?
Well, the best way to find me is probably through my website, which is tammygulerloeb.com. And if you start to type that in, it'll probably come up because there isn't any other Tammy Guler Loeb out there. Or I'm sure it'll be in the show notes too. So I am sure. Or you can try workfromtheinsideout.com as well, which will basically take you to tammygulerloeb.com. So easy enough to find me. Hope people will start to look for the book as well, which will hopefully be out by the end of June 2021.
Excellent. Yeah, no, obviously all the LinkedIn, Twitter, all the social media stuff will be in the show notes. And yeah, in terms of the book, do we have a sort of a hard date, Tammy, for that to come out, or is that still in the process of?
That's still in the process. So I'm looking at late June right now.
Brilliant. So by the time this episode comes out, we'll make sure we have all the links and everything in there. And yeah, I'm sure it's going to be an amazing book. I'm really looking. Well, I've been lucky enough to have a sneak preview, and I'm I'm guarding it with my life. I've been really lucky because I've had like 3 or 4 free books before they've come out. Yeah. And it's obviously a real privilege to have them, but you also feel slightly nervous that if you suddenly hit send.
Wait, is that that's because you started calling me Godfather. That's why you're nervous.
Exactly.
That's why you're nervous. You know, it's true. I get it.
Exactly.
I'm going to make you an offer. You can't refuse now.
And Tammy's channeling her inner Marlon Brando. Who was Al Pacino? I can never remember.
Marlon Brando, yeah.
Yeah, I will make sure all the details are in the show notes. And yeah, the book is a great read. And yeah, definitely check it out. Work from the Inside Out by Tammy Guler-Loeb. Tammy, thank you so much. And yeah, really looking forward to the book coming out and all your other projects. And once again, yeah, thanks a lot for the, you know, really it's the inspiration. And I think one thing that I think sometimes people forget is that you just need one person to sort of take a chance. And especially I think when people are looking for jobs, you know, you only need one interview or like series of interviews to go well. And I think for me, you know, having that conversation with you where, you know, you liked what I had to say, and I'm still thinking like, what is it that I said that was so interesting? But obviously you took a chance on me. You didn't have to. And literally at the end of that, you know, our half an hour meeting, which went to an hour, you said, look, appear on my podcast. And that really meant a lot to me, because I thought, look, if somebody who I haven't, you know, who I don't really know very well is offering me this chance to be on her podcast, then obviously there must be something there. And then I remember on the podcast saying, my podcast is coming out in January without having, you know, a logo, a title or anything. So it almost said to me, yeah, I was forced into a situation where I had to, you know, come up with the goods. So I had this crazy day where, you know, your episode was coming out about me, my podcast was coming out, and I was hosting a webinar. And it was just such an insane day. But, you know, we live to tell the tale. And now yeah. I've got a YouTube channel as well and the book. So, yeah, it's, you know.
There you
so,
go.
Tammy, thank you so much. Really appreciate all the help and the support. So
it's my absolute pleasure, Harsha.
Brilliant. Take care, Tammy. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening and staying to the end. That was such an enjoyable interview. If you would like to listen to more episodes, then please consider subscribing to the podcast, which is available on your favorite providers, and subscription is free. If you wish to learn more about any of the resources mentioned in this episode, please take a look at the show notes, which are available online. Thanks once again for listening. Stay safe and look after yourself. I hope you will join me again in the future.